It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour celebrating Arbor Day. We've got two tree experts with us today. Jeff Iles is chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Good to be here.
And DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, and good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mr. Vitosh. It's always good to share the airways with you, sir.
And Richard Giron's going to join the show in a little while to answer questions, but let's start off by talking about trees and some of the really beautiful arboretums around the state of Iowa. And from my perspective, some of these arboretums maybe are our best kept secrets because I've been surprised to come across a couple of them, and they're such lovely places. I mean, Jeff, do we know how many there are in Iowa?
Well, you know, I was doing some show prep yesterday because I always like to be prepared when I speak on your show, Charity.
I appreciate that.
And, you know, there's always the danger when you start listing arboretums that you're going to leave one out. So there are some that are better known than others, but there are, you know, a lot of communities have little arboretums that are kind of cute and they're useful and they serve the local populace. But there are some that are a little more noteworthy than others. And before we get into naming them, don't forget about our college campuses. There are some beautiful college campuses in this state that double as arboretums. And parochially speaking, Iowa State does a pretty good job in that department. So there's all kinds of places to view trees.
Absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about the philosophy behind an arboretum, because it's a collection of trees. What's the purpose?
Well, as Joni Mitchell said, they are tree museums, but they're places where we can go to look at trees and many times look at them without being crowded. We get to see their growth habits. We get to watch them as they mature. I mean, where can you go to find a mature specimen of a certain maple? And generally, arboretums provide that for us. So they're cool places. They're places to go, and they're quiet. You can hear the wind blowing through the white pine, and so they're reflective places. They're places we can just kind of take a step back. But they're also places where we can go and see what a tree is going to look like 20, 30 years down the road.
And you can kind of see a tree growing under ideal conditions, too, because when I walk through a forest, I love to see the trees, mm-hmm. but they're also interacting with each other, and
right.
some didn't get very much light when they were little and things like that. But arboretums plant them in maybe the best possible ways, right?
With that said, though, and you're right, for the most part, arboretums do that. But the Brenton Arboretum down in Dallas Center has taken that step and used trees, the same kind of tree, the same species, sometimes the same cultivar, in groupings. And they're not all ideally spaced, but it kind of simulates what might happen in more of a natural setting. So I don't want to single out the Brenton. We'd get to them sooner or later anyway, but they've kind of put a little different spin on how trees are displayed.
All right, so it's a lovely place to go to just enjoy nature, but you can learn a lot about different tree species by visiting an arboretum as well.
Oh yeah, it's just a great place to heighten your knowledge and again realize that we have lots of trees to choose from. We tend to use the same things over and over again, so an arboretum will broaden your plant palette if you go with an open mind.
Well, and we've talked a lot about that on the show because, of course, with the emerald ash borer, we planted a lot of ash trees, and now we're going to lose a lot of ash trees. And we've talked a lot about creating diversity in your yard. So this is a great place to go and do some research if you're looking to plant trees in your yard.
Well, it is. And generally, in fact, in all cases, these places have great staff, people that know trees, they know their collections. And so they're great horticulturists, great arborists, and so they're just great places to learn. And many times these places, these facilities, will have educational programs. And so it's always fun to check out their websites and keep current on what programs they have coming up, some of them indoors, some of them outdoors. So we're just lucky to have so many great ones in the state of Iowa.
Now, give us a little bit of advice. I want to hear from both of you. If I'm going to go visit an arboretum, and maybe I'm thinking about planting some trees in my own yard. Do you have a suggestion for a way to sort of wander around and learn about the different species?
Mark is a great wanderer, so I'll let him I'll let him handle this one.
Well, the thing I think about, Charity, is when I have someone call who wants to plant a tree in their yard, we always talk about the right tree in the right place. Instead of going through the situation and saying, well, I want an oak in my front yard for this purpose, is to evaluate that site first and look at the spacing, look at the soils, make sure the utilities are not too close, and see what's really going to fit that. And as they start to figure out what might fit, look at these different lists and see what's available from Iowa State, look at their list. The Iowa DNR now has a publication on tree selection, too. There's a lot of different publications out there. But then what I always tell them to do is, what I like about the Arboretum is they can kind of pick some of the trees that are interested in. And it's always hard when you plant that 6 or 7 foot tree to imagine that that tree is going to get 50 or 60 feet tall. So an arboretum is a great place to look at those selections and say, is that something I really see fitting and looking out my window every day at? So it really gives them that image that, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And I mean, how many things can you pick that you're buying that you can actually go somewhere and say, hey, this is what it's going to look like in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, depending on the age of the arboretum. So there's this great collection in these different places, and you can really try to find something that's going to fit what you want. So as a wanderer, I tend to start on the trail. Most of these have trails, and a lot of them have tags and different things. Some will have maps. Some will have maps online. Like Jeff said, some will put them in groups. Some will put them in collections of conifers, then versus the hardwoods or versus ornamentals. The neat thing about these arboretums is follow the yellow brick road. There's always a yellow brick road or a yellow mulched road that you can follow. And if you want to get off the beaten path, most of these allow you to do that, just to wander that way too. So you can follow the yellow brick road, or you can just meander and start. What I often do is I just look, and if something catches my eye, I meander that way.
You know, Charity, Mark makes a good point, and I hate to say that on public radio that Mark makes a good point, but the Iowa Arboretum has a great woodland trail.
And the Iowa Arboretum near Madrid.
And so they have a classic arboretum, but they also have these nature trails or woodland trails. They're self-guided, but they allow you to do what Mark just said, to get off the beaten path and see trees in more of a natural setting. And it gives you a glimpse as to what this state might have looked like 150 years ago, which is always kind of fun.
Well, and Mark mentioned, you know, how old the arboretum is, how old these trees might be. I mean, that sounds like with the Iowa Arboretum, they also incorporated existing trees.
Sure, yeah. And it's amazing. These places are also green spaces that are there for the long run. You know, Iowa is one of the most, not the word disturbed is not the one I want to use, but it's an
changed
altered
landscape.
Changed landscape. And so it's kind of fun. It's important for these green spaces to be preserved, not just for us and our kids, but for generations to come. So when you think of places like the Iowa Arboretum, the Bickelhaupt Arboretum, or the Brenton Arboretum, which are the three big ones, I think, in the state.
And where are they located?
Well, Iowa Arboretum, of course, is in Madrid. The Brenton Arboretum is in Dallas Center. And then Bickelhaupt is a small little arboretum in Clinton, Iowa. But these are green spaces that are there for the long run. And with any luck, they'll be there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And that's kind of cool to think of a place that we've grown up and enjoyed, that future generations will also be able to enjoy them.
And with arboretums, is there a philosophy about adding species over time so that they have a variety of different ages of the trees?
Yeah, these are not static collections. You know, what was popular 20, 30 years ago isn't popular today. So that's the challenge for arboretums is to represent trees that do well in the state, but also let the customer, the client, the citizen know that there are new trees that we can use. So these collections are not static, and that's why it's always important to take the long view, you know, have land that you can annex or add to as you want to expand your collections. Arboretums are always changing, and even classic old arboretums like the Arnold in Boston have undergone lots of changes during its long, illustrious career history.
The other neat thing about these arboretums, they're more than just trees. They often have annuals, perennials, shrubs, all kinds of different plants. Mm. It's not just trees. And we talk about landscaping and stuff. So a lot of times there's a lot of collections of a lot of other stuff that you might use in your landscape too. So you can see a lot of different things.
Another excellent point. And if you're into wildlife.
That's twice.
It's twice. if you're into looking at birds or butterflies or insects, I mean, again, another just a great place to go to do this.
There's you mentioned a few of the larger arboretums in Iowa. The Cedar Valley Arboretum up near Waterloo is another one. It's
sure.
Out at Hawkeye Community College.
Yep.
So there are a lot of smaller ones around the state as well. When you were starting to look around for this show, Jeff, is there an easy way to find an arboretum near you?
No.
No.
That's why when I started rattling off names, I knew I was going to get in trouble with somebody. But, you know, it seems like every county has something that they call an arboretum. And as I mentioned right at the top of the show, a lot of communities have little places, little green spaces where they've planted trees. And then if you really take a liberal definition of what an arboretum is, a lot of our cities, a lot of our communities have really cool street tree populations.
Yeah.
And some yards, the Vitas yard being one of them, is a mini arboretum.
Not really.
You won't find any crab apples in his yard, but that's another story.
And a bone of contention.
It is.
I can tell.
The Dubuque Arboretum is nice. And as Mark mentioned, these aren't just trees. In fact, one of the things I like to look at when I go to arboretums are some of the conifer collections. And there's a whole classic group of conifers we call garden conifers, the dwarf, slow-growing conifers. And there are some great collections of garden conifers at the Bicklehupt, at the Dubuque Arboretum, at the Iowa Arboretum. So these are slow-growing conifers that fit really nicely into smaller size landscapes.
Well, and throughout the hour, I'd love to hear from you if you have a place where you really love to go and see trees. I've spent some time, and now the name of the park is escaping me, in a little park along the Mississippi River in Davenport with the biggest, most beautiful oak trees. Mm. And, you know, maybe it's not well known for that, but it certainly was a place where we could touch history and see some trees that had been there for a very, very long time. So throughout the hour, if you have suggestions for places you like to go and enjoy trees, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also, any questions you have about trees or the plants in your life, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Again, you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Jeff Iles, chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University and crabapple enthusiast. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is also here. And coming up in just a moment, Richard Giron, horticulturist from Iowa State University Extension, will also join us. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Arbor Day, so we're focusing on trees this hour, but you're welcome to join the conversation with any questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now is horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you sent me some beautiful pictures of the redbud trees on campus at Iowa State University. What an amazing spring we're having for blooming trees. It's so beautiful right now.
Especially the redbuds. And it has to be the unofficial tree of Iowa State University. Wherever you look, wherever you turn, there they are. And most of the time during the year, there are these nondescript small trees that nobody notices. But when they're in bloom for 10 to 14 days, they just stand out. So
yeah, so beautiful. Also, of course, with me, Jeff Iles, chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. And we've had kind of ideal conditions for blossoms, it feels like. The blooming trees look so beautiful. Do these cool, damp conditions, do they kind of preserve the blooms for a little while?
The cooler weather tends to do that. And we haven't had any strong rain. We've had some rain and strong winds, but the magnolias kind of took it hard this year. The magnolia flowers were looking great, and then we had some low temperatures that that tended to fry the flower petals, the tepals. So that was unfortunate. But other than that, it has been a spectacular year for bloom.
And keeping them nice for a long time is nice. Of course, we could have a big blow coming. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then they're all gone.
Yeah.
We did get a comment from Pamela on Facebook with a link to their beautiful arboretum in Newton, Iowa. So just reinforcing the argument that there are many, many beautiful arboretums all over the state, and sometimes it can be a little difficult to find them all.
We also have Muscatine, and there's actually one up in Mason City at Georgia Hanford Park called the Arthur J. Girk Arboretum up there, too.
Good call. Charity, I did have Newton on my list. We just didn't get to it.
Oh, okay.
It's a 6-acre park within Agnes Patterson Park.
And there's 150 tree species there. That's what I read this morning.
Nice.
Yes.
Very, very nice.
I did a little research, too.
Dueling facts. This is great.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. Jared is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Jared. Hi, Jared.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep. What's your question?
Oh, great. So we want to plant a tree in between our neighbors and our house. On this side, and we'd like to put a dogwood tree in, not crabapple, but a dogwood tree. But we're concerned because my understanding is dogwood trees need a certain amount of sun, but not full sun. And this area is kind of a full sun area. So my question is if you guys think that a dogwood would do just fine if it was a lot of sun, a pretty full sun area, and if not, what would be a similar variety of tree that would kind of fit for that area?
Well, let me take a crack at this, Jared, then I'll let Mark or Richard weigh in. There is a crabapple that I think is underutilized in the state. It's not a native plant, but it's a great, tough dogwood. It's called the Cornelian cherry dogwood, and I've seen it do quite well in full sun exposures. Now, it does tend to get rather broad, tends to look more shrub-like than tree-like, but with some pruning, I've seen it trimmed into a nice small tree. But the Cornelian cherry dogwood has a yellow flower very early in the season, and it does produce a red fruit, which gives it the name Cornelian cherry dogwood. But that's one that'll tolerate full sun.
And I think it depends on your space, too, how much space you actually have. And if you don't have enough room for a larger tree, there are some native dogwood shrubs, too, that you could plant a clump of or something like that. They're not going to flower the same way, but that also would have some characteristics that might be beneficial also.
No, for sure. Great. So, Cornelius cherry.
Cornelian cherry. So it's one.
Cornelian cherry.
Cornelian cherry dogwood. Cornus moss, MAS, is the botanic name.
All right. Okay. Yeah, Jared, thanks a lot for your call.
For sure. Thank you.
Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call. We've got Paul on the line next in Davenport. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. A couple of years ago, we planted a viburnum red wing. I think it's called American cranberry bush, but the nursery bought it from kind of pruned it into be more of a tree. And it's doing well, except for when it produces its cluster of berries later in the summer. Unfortunately, the squirrels go after it, and normally I wouldn't mind about that, but the branches of this red wing are really pretty weak and tender, and unfortunately a lot of them snapped off, and I had to prune them off and pretty much deformed the tree. I ended up cutting off all the berries, which kind of defeated the purpose of having the tree. Is there anything that you'd recommend to to help the tree either hold up to the squirrels, or I know it's hard to keep squirrels out of things, but
So, Paul, you're fighting, I think, against the natural tendencies of what this plant does. Typically, the American cranberry viburnum is kind of a multi-stem, looks more like a lilac, so it has that kind of an appearance. And so if yours is trained to a single stem, I can see where it would look kind of odd, especially as the branches begin to droop to the ground. So
right.
I'm trying to picture what this thing actually looks like, but you're kind of fighting against what the plant normally does, and that is it tends to sucker, it tends to send up new shoots, and it has a very lilac-looking appearance. So I guess
the nursery trained it to be one stem from the ground, and so it doesn't really start spreading out to about 3 or 4 feet off the ground.
Yeah. Well, all you can do is trim off or prune back those branches that have been broken. These plants are hard to kill, so they'll generally regenerate new tissue, but I'm just not sure how this thing is going to look over the long run.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's doing well this spring. It's, trying to bounce back. I'm just worried later in the summer when the squirrels head back to it. Just kind of taking 2 steps backwards.
Do you have a dog?
Yeah, we do have a dog, yes.
Okay, good. What?
The best squirrel prevention tip that you have there, Jeff?
We will try that, but during the day when we're at work, it might be kind of hard to do that.
Okay. So, Maybe a fake dog.
How about any like spices? Have you found any spices to sprinkle around the ground to deter any squirrels?
Mm. That's a Jim Pease question. I wouldn't even touch that one.
All right. Well, and I'm going to go ahead and project for Jim with a no. But that's not a 100% guarantee. But squirrels are hard to discourage. Thanks a lot for your call, Paul. Let's go to another Paul. This one's in Iowa City. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Hi. How are you doing, Charity and guest?
Good. What's your question?
I'm curious about what's going to happen to the ash trees that aren't going to be treated. Is there any state agencies or private companies that are thinking about harvesting the wood? Has that been done east where this has been a problem for, you know, a decade or so? I mean, 100 years ago, ash was used a great deal in furniture. So that's my question.
I'll start on that, and if you want to add in, Jeff, you can. And actually, Paul, what's going to happen with stuff that's not treated? And even stuff treated, we don't know how well that's going to do long-term and stuff. Right now, it looks like there's some promise there for treated trees. But basically, there's really not much natural resistance out there. So we pretty much know, based on what's happening in Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, many other states, is most of these ash are going to die. I would say in the high 90s, close to 100%, if a tree's not protected, it's eventually going to die. And in Iowa City, it was recently found. But what we run into is things just don't die overnight starting off. Usually there's about a 5 to 10 year lag period that population needs to build up high enough before things really start to die quickly. But so we're in that when you find it, you kind of start the clock, and then you kind of go 5 to 10 years, and then you start seeing significant tree death. As far as utilization, there is a lot of organizations and state agencies and others in communities that are really looking at different options. Some communities have brought in portable sawmills. Actually, the city of Davenport has been utilizing some of theirs for different benches, and they're actually selling chairs and some different things that they're building in-house with their crews. I think you're going to see some mills and others get involved. Also in the Iowa City area, the University of Iowa is going, I think, a certain percent sustainable energy, and one of those sources is wood chips. So they're looking to work with different communities, tree services, and others to maybe be able to utilize some of those chips for their system. So there are a lot of different things, and you are right. Ash is a good wood. And ultimately, too, it's a very good wood for firewood. And we always utilize firewood in Iowa. So we're going to have quite a bit of a source of that. Yes, there are a lot of people looking, and a lot of different states have tried to utilize. The challenge that you run into is to utilize the timber or the lumber in urban areas. We do get some concern with metals. People put nails, wires, different things, staples. There's always those concerns when you're looking, using chainsaws and other cutting equipment, and also those things can actually cause stains and stuff in the wood if you're using it for certain things. So there's always those kind of concerns. But yes, there are a lot of options out there potentially for utilizing some of this material.
When I was living in Michigan, people, of course, were really concerned about slowing down the spread, trying to prevent it from moving all the way to Iowa and other places west. And for a while, they were chipping all the trees into chips that were smaller than 2 inches, with the idea that that would prevent the pest from continuing to live in the wood and spreading around. Are there concerns about that if we're trying to use this wood?
And they've actually changed that spec, because when they first started chipping up there, they were moving that mulch, and they were actually finding infestations. So now they're down to an inch. And so there are specs like that. And we'll continue to say this, and we'll say this all the time. If people are utilizing material and we really start getting infestations in this area, we still will, even though there's not a quarantine in Iowa anymore, you can move things throughout the state, we do not recommend it, because we have not found it clear out in northwest Iowa and other parts of Iowa. And the longer we can keep it here, we know it's going to get there. But everything we can do with our firewood and stuff, and for utilizing that material, keep it local. And if you're making benches and stuff, don't attach the bark. take the bark off and use just the wood and don't make a bench with bark.
Right. So if the bark is removed, that should remove the
pest. That's going to help. Okay. Yep. That's if you can get down to the wood material, that's going to help. So even though we have a federal quarantine, it says we can't move that material out of the state. You can move it within, but we do not recommend it. Keep it local.
All right.
Great question.
It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Jeff Iles, Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. We've been focusing on trees this hour, but you're welcome to ask questions about any of the plants in your life at 866-780-9100. Mark is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
All.
Yeah.
I have a question about fruit trees. We have a couple of Northern Spy apple trees that we planted about 7 years ago. And I know Northern Spies take a little longer to fruit than other trees, but these have been 7 years and haven't even produced a blossom. So I'm wondering if there's something we could be doing with fertilizers or what we could be doing to try to encourage them to fruit.
Actually, no, you really can't do much. In fact, fertilization may actually discourage flowering and fruiting because it may encourage vegetative growth at the expense of flowering. So basically nothing.
Wait.
Just be patient. It can be up to 10 years before they start to flower and bear fruit, but be patient. The only thing I might do would be if we're having very dry weather in mid to late summer, maybe water the trees. Because the actual flower buds begin to form in mid to late summer. And so you want the growing conditions to be ideal so they can form.
Okay. We've planted about a dozen other trees over that same seven-year period, all apple trees. Should we also avoid fertilizing them under the same idea?
Right. Most Iowa soils are quite fertile. And so we typically don't really need to fertilize our fruit trees because, again, if we overdo it, we may actually discourage flower formation.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Mark. And let's get to some email questions here. This one's from Fred in Corning. Why are Norway maples not recommended by the DNR for Iowa? I've found them to be trouble-free, medium-growth, dependable southern Iowa trees.
Those are darn good trees. So I'll let our DNR friend handle this one.
Well, one of the concerns about Norway maple is it is a non-native that has the potential to spread into our native habitats. And if you go up into New York State and other states, it has actually started to outcompete in some of the native habitat and some of their native, even their sugar maple areas. And in Iowa, we are starting to see in some areas where the urban areas meet the rural areas, that this species is starting to come in, and it's pretty aggressive and can be pretty competitive. So there are some concerns that's going to change the habitat. And in a forest situation, maple produces a lot of shade. And if we have an oak forest and Norway maple comes in that understory, a lot of those native wildflowers and stuff eventually are going to get shaded out, which is really going to change that habitat for a lot of different species, including the plants and animals.
Charity, if I may. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm agreeing with Mark again, seriously.
Number three.
But let's not paint with too broad of a brush. Not all introduced plants, not all non-native plants are invasive, and I sometimes hear that. And so there are some very, very good plants that we have brought to this country from Europe, from Asia, that have not posed to be invasive problems, but there are some. Norway maple is the poster child that's made us all take another look at whether we should be using this plant or not. Another one that we use an awful lot in the landscape is Callery pear, and Mr. Vitosh has seen evidence of this plant going nuts over in the Iowa City area. So the Callery pear, the flowering pears we use in the landscape, now that we've used so many cultivars, are beginning to cross pollinate, throw fruit, and these things are becoming a real nuisance.
And not just in Iowa. The Callery pear thing is actually Missouri, Illinois, and some other states where it's taking over, again, some of our natural areas. And we're spending billions of dollars in some of these resources to battle non-native invasives. But I do agree with Jeff. This is where the plant selection thing comes in, is when you're selecting plants, there are some non-natives that don't produce seed and don't spread that are very good selections. A great example is ginkgo. It's not a native plant, but it's a great plant for urban environments. So I would agree with Dr. Isles.
Wow.
All right, we're going to take a short break.
It's a love fest.
We'll be back in
it's
just
Arbor
a
Day,
moment.
Baby.
We've got Jeff Isles, chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, DNR District Forester Mark Vitush, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. We'll be back to agree with one another and answer your questions in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's Arbor Day. It's also Horticulture Day. So we've been talking a lot about trees this hour. We've got a couple of tree experts with us, Jeff Isles, chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitush. Horticulturist Richard Giron is also here. And you know a thing or two about trees as well, although they're overshadowing you a little bit today, Richard.
That's okay.
All right. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I asked earlier in the hour if you have some suggestions for great places to go and see beautiful trees. Jane is on the line in Des Moines with a suggestion. Hi, Jane.
Hi. How are you?
Great. What's your suggestion?
Well, my suggestion is I made friends years ago with a wonderful man and woman who started a tree farm and in Iowa. It was around the Lost Hills area, and they're deceased now, both of them, but I got to be good friends with them, asked to camp in their tree farm, and they let me. It was a wonderful experience, and the thing about that is it was almost all conifers, and now it's been several decades when he started that. And they are huge and beautiful and just amazing trees. And the interesting thing was he started this as a supposedly business. And when they finally got to the point where he could cut them and use them and, you know, dig them out for other people's lawns and such, he couldn't bear to do it. He couldn't bear to hurt the trees. So this tree farm that started out to be an enterprise turned into a hobby, and they're just absolutely gorgeous. So, of course, you'd have to have permission, but I think tree farms, you know, this gentleman and his wife would love to talk about trees to anybody that, you know, wandered by.
Oh, nice. Well, what a cool experience. Jane, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
There's actually an opportunity to see some of these different tree farms and throughout the state. If you go to Iowa State University Extension Forestry, throughout the year, spring and fall mostly, but we have forestry field days, which are basically field days that are at some of these different tree farms throughout the state. We just had one this weekend at a forested area near Iowa City where we had 128 people come out to learn about forestry and ponds and different things associated. But if you go on the Extension Forestry website, you can see where those different field days. We also have field days at our state forest, a number of our state forests throughout the state at different times of year where they're usually, it's just a one-day field event where people can come and learn about tree planting, all kinds of things related to forestry, maybe to see some of these different tree farms throughout the state.
Neat. Well, and we were just talking about evergreen trees, which, of course, they can be problematic in Iowa. Cliff has a question. What's a good evergreen tree to plant, and when is the best time to plant one?
A good conifer. I've always been a big fan of concolor or white fir. They like a well-drained soil, full sun, but that's one of my favorites. If it tends to grow a bit slowly, but if you want something a bit faster, I've always liked Norway spruce. I know spruce have a series of problems, but that one grows at a pretty good clip and is pretty hardy. I like white pine, which is a native plant to the northeastern part of the state. And finally, I'll let Mark get in here in a minute. Serbian spruce is really a cool spruce, very graceful looking plant. Again, not immune to disease problems, but really a very graceful, stately conifer.
Thanks to the previous landowner who I purchased my house from, I have a collection of those first three species in my backyard.
Really?
The concolor fir, the white pine, and the Norway spruce.
Hmm.
And I have a rule that I cannot buy a house unless it at least has one white pine in the backyard. Both houses I've owned have had white pine. I love white pine. It has some of its issues. But, you know, the thing in Iowa we have to remember is Over the last 5,000 years, the climate has changed a little bit. And as the glaciers moved up, it was a cooler environment. And we do know that northern Iowa was a lot of conifers. Mm-hmm. We do know that through the fossils and the pollen. But as time has come, we've heated up. And it is a tough environment. As our summer gets hotter, it is tougher. So there are some issues for those. I will add one other species that not everyone likes, and it depends on what purpose they're using for, but especially for windbreaks, one of the species I like is eastern red cedar. So I will
which
add
grows
that
really well.
It grows
here.
Really well, as these guys chuckle. But it's a species that doesn't have a lot of challenges. It's very durable. It's good for wildlife. And so again, depending on the, it may not be one that you plant in your backyard as a specimen, but if you're looking for a screen or a windbreak, it does have some nice attributes.
You know, Charity, that's a little bit like admitting you like Justin Bieber. You know? You know, I'm surprised he said that publicly. Wow. No, it's a tough character. It's a tough bird. You know, and Cliff, sorry, Cliff wanted to know when to plant. You know, And you can plant in the spring, you can plant in the summer, even early fall is good for conifers. I get a little squeamish when you go too late in the fall, but a lot of the plants we buy in the nursery now can be planted almost any time. But you know, I like that late summer, early fall time period.
When the soil temperatures are still up, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, because really, if you do it when the soil temperatures are coming down, you're really not gaining anything. We do get some actually fall root growth. Mm-hmm. So if you do it, like Jeff said, late August, early September, you still have those good soil temperatures. So that tree is going to be able to take advantage of that time.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of white pine, Barbara is on the line in Cedar Rapids, struggling with two large white pines. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. What are you seeing on your pines?
Well, they're two very mature white pines. I just love them. They're probably about 15, 18 years old. And just this spring, they're developing on their branches. And I've noticed a little bit on their trunks, about midway up, this white, fluffy, cottony, powdery stuff. And when I do a Google thing, it shows that it might be a fungus. So I'm just calling to see the best way that I can get those treated to save my trees.
Huh. I would tend to think more insect-related.
Okay.
And we might need to see some photos on that.
I can send them.
So if you can take some digital photos, some close-ups. Someone said
Mark's whispering.
I'm whispering.
Go ahead, Mark.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
There is an adelgid on white pine. White pine adelgid, or it's white pine aphid, but it does produce a very cottony substance. But it's starting to be more common. It looks like there's little snow pellets or something or cotton on the tree. But it's I believe it's white pine adelgid or white pine aphid. But if you Google white pine aphid or adelgid in Iowa State University, you can find information on it there specifically, because I know there's been Donald or someone has written some articles on that. But I would agree with Richard to still send in some pictures to verify. But there is a specific insect on white pine that produces that cottony material.
And so if you do that, send the email to insects, that's INSECTS. Mm-hmm. At iastate.edu. And that goes to the entomology staff here at Iowa State, and they can look at that.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck with that. We have another tree disease problem. John is on the line in Tama. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, what's your problem?
I have, in my home yard here, I have a huge grove of very mature bur oaks, and there's probably 60 or 80 of them, and they seem to be dying off at a rate faster than I would expect if it was just lightning or something like that. I was wondering if there were any disease processes or anything I need to know about or have checked on to save the rest of them.
I'll jump in here again, fellas. You can beat me later, so beat me down here. There's a couple possibilities here, John. They're on oaks, there always is a concern with a fungus called oak wilt. And usually with oak wilt, those trees will get infected in the springtime, early summer, with broken branches, and there's a beetle that carries that fungus to the tree. And then kind of mid-summer, you'll start to get, on individual branches, you'll start to get some wilting leaves or browning leaves that will fall off or stay on the tree brown. But then the next spring, those leaves will not come back out, and those branches will be dead. In the case of red oaks, those trees will die in 1 year. In the case of bur oaks and white oaks, those trees could be infected for many years, and it could take quite a few years for those trees to decline. But we also have a new disease called BOB, or bur oak blight, on bur oaks that is a fungus called Tabakia. It's a common leaf disease, but this new disease is more virulent and more damaging. And what happens on bur oaks is usually about July into August, those leaves will start to turn brown kind of on the tips, and they'll either stay on the tree, but a lot of times they will fall off. And then the next spring, those same branches will re-leaf like nothing happened. Everything looks okay. But for year after year, that tree becomes reinfected. Eventually, sometimes 6 to 8 years later, those trees can start to decline. So what I would suggest is that you probably start in about July, start looking for symptoms. And then if you can get those symptoms, I would try to collect some samples and get them over to the disease clinic. Or if you have an actual grove, if you go to iowadnr.gov, you can contact our district forester who covers that area. And if it's an actual grove, he may be able to come over and take a look for you to kind of help you diagnose what's going on.
Okay, thank you. Is there any chance they're just dying of old age because they're huge trees?
Is it a timber pasture, John, or anything like that?
It used to be a timbered pasture, and now it's part of town, but...
One thing, even if it was 60, 70 years ago, a timber pasture, with pasture and cattle and livestock, you have compaction. And with that, a lot of times you get root rots and stuff. And so long term, that when you get drought like we had in 2012 and different things like that, that can cause some decline. But I will tell you that these diseases have really started to show up a lot more. So I think it could be a combination of things, and it might be something you want to look at specifically. But you're right. I mean, if it was old timber pasture, you could be just seeing some general decline. But bur oak should last 150 to 250 years old. And so if you're seeing some decline, especially on younger stuff or fairly massive areas, then I think you might have something else in combination.
All right. Well, good luck with that, John. And I know a lot of people with oak trees struggle with a lot of different issues these days.
That's why we plant diversity, right, Dr. Iles?
You betcha.
And earlier I was talking about a great place to see some very beautiful old oak trees, and I couldn't remember the name. Trish has supplied it. Credit Island.
Yes.
Near
yes.
Davenport.
Yes.
City-owned park and island
they
right off the
big,
Mississippi.
They have some big, huge bur oaks
so
and
amazing.
Stuff in there. Yep. I
yes.
think they even have some swamp oaks in there. Yeah.
It's a truly wonderful place to visit. All right, let's get back to the phones. We've got Roberta on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited to get some information here.
Great. What's your question?
I have a very old saucer magnolia tree. It was planted by my great aunt probably in the late 50s or early 60s. It has magnificent blossoms, and you know, it blossoms every year, except this year it got caught in the frost. But anyway, usually in the fall, it produces these kind of like cone pods.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of pinkish or so. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen the pods do anything. You know, they don't blossom. They don't... Anyway, but I've been curious, what are those pods? And if I got one of those, could I plant it to get another tree?
Okay, I'll take this one. Those are actually the fruit, and they're rather odd looking. And usually if you take one down in the fall and very carefully take it apart, you may find several large seeds. And they're typically kind of reddish, orangish, or pinkish. Okay. And you can actually germinate those. But to germinate, they need to be exposed to cold, moist conditions. So what I would do would be to get a pot and some potting soil and pot those up about an inch deep in the potting soil, water them in, put them in a plastic bag, and put them in the refrigerator. And leave them there during the winter, take about in the spring, and hopefully they'll germinate.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Roberta. And Susie sent an email with a really interesting question about ash trees. She says, if removing the ash tree's bark will eliminate infestation, does it follow that I can employ a chainsaw sculptor and make a piece of art out of the trunk sans the bark?
Yeah, I think that would be fine. In fact, it's fun to watch those guys do their craft. It really is art. It's also kind of dangerous. But yeah, if the bark is gone, there should be no danger of harboring an infestation. Mark, would you agree?
I agree 100%. The thing we have to remember about this locally is we're not going to stop. No matter what we do, we're not going to stop the infestation. So even if you kept it locally and you kept the bark on it, it probably isn't going to make a huge difference to the overall infestation, you know, of the area. But anything we can do, if you're going to keep things or move things, you know, if you can remove that bark, that's going to help somewhat in reducing. I would agree. Yeah.
All right. And if you happen to be a chainsaw sculptor, this could be a time of tremendous opportunity
for
you.
Could be a booming business.
Right. Could be.
I'm already picking out what design on my ash tree in my front yard. So I got a couple years here, but
so,
I think it might
be
a crab apple.
How about Herky the Hawk? I mean, you're in Iowa City.
What are you trying to start? I saw somebody who had a chainsaw sculpture in their yard just the other day. It's a Lorax.
You know,
the little guy from
sure.
the Lorax. He speaks for the trees, so that's nice. All right, we're nearly out of time. Jeff Isles, how are you going to celebrate Arbor Day?
You know, we always plant trees on Arbor Day. In fact, we just had a huge tree planting here on campus. So today, I've got to find a tree to plant somewhere. If I don't plant a tree, I'll go prune one at least. So at least I'll do something with the trees.
Hopefully not an oak.
I'm supposed to go on a bike ride this afternoon, but it's really cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Mark. I got that.
Mark, are you planting trees today?
Actually, I'm going to watch and monitor 720 seedling tree planting at Lake McBride State Park this afternoon.
Nice. Excellent. Well, thank you, all of you, for being here today, and happy Arbor Day.
Same to you, Charity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Isles, Chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, and horticulturist Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. Thank you so much for all your calls and questions. I wish we had time to get to every single one of them, but again, there's always next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.